Good afternoon, Your Honors. May I please the court, Robert Borquez, registration number 19577, appearing on behalf of the defendant appellant, Grover Tarver, who's appealing the judgment of conviction entered on jury verdicts finding him guilty of possession of a gram or less of a Schedule II controlled substance and possession of marijuana. Mr. Tarver was also convicted of misdemeanor resisting arrest, and that's not an issue that we brought up on appeal, so it's just the drug offenses that we're here on. Since the panel has read our briefs and is familiar with the facts in the case, I'll jump over that and skip over that and just get to our argument. But basically, there is one issue here, and that's whether the trial court erred in overruling Mr. Tarver's objection to testimony about field testing of the suspected drugs in this case, where the court failed to conduct a Schreck hearing before allowing the testimony about the field test results. And what happened was, during questioning of officers Gitzler and McCullough, the deputy district attorney asked each of the officers about the results of field testing done on the suspected controlled substances. And defense counsel objected. In reading the transcript, it's really clear that defense counsel was really thrown for a loop when this was brought up. It looks like this was totally unanticipated that the people were going to attempt to introduce results of field testing. The defense counsel made the appropriate objection, argued that there hadn't been compliance with the requirements of Schreck. The trial court overruled his objection and basically invited defense counsel to cross-examine the officers and basically shifted responsibility from the party proffering the evidence of the field test onto the defendant to basically prove that the test was unreliable through cross-examination. Defense counsel took the court up on that invitation and asked the two officers if they were familiar with any studies done on the reliability of field testing. And I've cited what sections in the transcripts that's located in my brief, but the officers both testified that they knew of no studies that have been done on the reliability of the field testing. In Schreck, amongst other things, our Supreme Court held that the trial court has to make specific findings on the record as to the helpfulness and the reliability of the proffered scientific evidence. And the record in this case indicates that no such findings were made by the trial court judge. The judge simply let the defendant deal with the issue on cross-examination. As part of the gatekeeping function that the trial judge had, the judge was obligated to inquire into three things under Schreck: the reliability of the scientific principles, the qualifications of the witness, and the usefulness of the testimony. Now, in our brief, we conceded that if the test was reliable, it would be useful. But its usefulness to the jury was contingent on a finding that it was reliable, and that wasn't satisfied. Schreck requires reliability and relevance. It's not in the disjunctive, it's in the conjunctive. The last issue I wanted to address was that this was not harmless error, because defense counsel brought out during trial that the suspected narcotics had been tested at the Colorado Springs Metro Crime Lab, and there had been some problems with the proficiency of work done at the crime lab. And most of that was in 2009, but there were some cases going back as early as 2007 where there were some problems with test results. Mr. Tarver's case was in 2008. So clearly, the crime lab had some credibility problems with regard to its work product, and then the district attorney essentially tried to bolster the crime lab's finding about the nature of these substances by introducing the evidence about the field tests. The last thing I wanted to address was the people's argument that my client at one point purportedly admitted ownership of the little baggies and the contents of the little baggies when he was questioned by the police officers, that being the suspected crack cocaine and powder cocaine. Assuming for the sake of argument that the defendant did admit that he owned these baggies and the contents, that in itself doesn't establish that that was cocaine. In other words, it could have been cocaine, it could have been an imitation controlled substance. And the fact that the defendant said it was cocaine, absent any kind of evidence that he had tested the substance himself, is insufficient to establish that that was cocaine.
Saying that his admission carries no weight?
Virtually no weight.
And being that nobody cares whether he admits it or not?
I think that arguably the admission would help with the possession element of the offense, but I don't think that admission establishes that that was cocaine or crack cocaine.
But the question related specifically to acknowledgement that did...
I'd have to look at the exact wording, but even if that were true and he said it was cocaine, that doesn't make it cocaine. People on the street sometimes carry substances that they represent to be a controlled substance, and it could be an imitation controlled substance.
Well, assuming that's true, assuming that all of that's true, are you saying a jury could not convict this defendant based on his admission alone?
I do say that, Your Honor.
And why? Because it's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt?
Yes, and because it's there is a very credible possibility that it was an imitation controlled substance.
But here you have a little more. You have the lab. True, the lab had problems, but you do have the lab corroborating the defendant's statement.
That's correct, Your Honor. But we also have the fact that the jury heard testimony about the field test. And, you know, I think that contaminates the decision-making process, because absent a determination before it was admitted, the evidence of the field test, there has not been established reliability. So, are there any other questions? If not, I would reserve my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jillian Price, bar number 40815, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado. This court should affirm Mr. Tarver's convictions for two reasons. First, the testimony concerning the field test was not admitted as scientific evidence, and as such, the provisions of People v. Shrek, which my opponent cites to, were simply not applicable here. Secondly, in light of Mr. Tarver's confession that the substances that he was found with were in fact drugs and that they did belong to him, rendered any error in the admission of this testimony harmless. Now, as an initial matter, the field test testimony was admitted in this manner. The first mention occurred when Mr. Tarver opened the door by asking Officer Alvarez what he did in the course of an investigation. And reading from the 1019 transcript at page 168, Mr. Tarver's counsel asks, after you collect narcotics or something you think may be narcotics, what do you do with it at that point? And the officer responds, we usually do a field test. Secondly, Officer Dietzler, and this is at page 195 of the same transcript, on redirect examination, the prosecutor asked, after an investigation is concluded and the drugs are taken in, what occurs when you go back to the police station? And again, the officer responds that, among other things, the detective conducts a field test. Thirdly, Officer McCullough also testified that, and this is on page 16 of the October 20th transcript, whenever we see suspected narcotics, we field test it prior to placing it into evidence. Now, under those circumstances, the record shows that this field test testimony was not sought to be introduced as scientific proof of Mr. Tarver's guilt. It was simply one of the many things that the officers did in the course of their investigation of this case. As such, this evidence was not, because it was not admitted as scientific testimony and because the officers were not qualified as experts in this case, the provisions of Shrek simply do not apply.
Secondly, you're saying they were just explaining what is routine for them on the street. They test it under a field test. If it changes to a certain color, they believe they have probable cause. Was that simple?
That's exactly correct. And indeed, Officer Dietzler, and I don't have the page and line number to cite to you, but I believe Officer Dietzler did testify that, yes, a field test is one of the things that he uses as probable cause in the course of his investigation.
He also, I believe, said that it was not reliable as the actual test.
That's correct. Indeed, on cross-examination, Mr. Tarver elicited testimony, and again, I'm paraphrasing, that the inquiry does not end with the field test. Indeed, the substances are sent to a lab, and Mr. Tarver also elicited testimony from the officer that lab tests are going to be more reliable than a field test.
And these substances were sent to the lab?
That's correct.
And came back positive?
Yes, they came back positive for cocaine on the one hand and marijuana on the other. Now, to the extent that Mr. Tarver claims he was surprised about this testimony concerning that a field test was done, it's mentioned several times in pretrial motions and discovery. If we look at page 3 of the court file and the probable cause affidavit, the officer writes that he field tested both substances and they came back as presumptive positives again for cocaine and marijuana. Additionally, just as another example, at page 20 of the court file in the people's response to Mr. Tarver's motion to suppress, at paragraph 13, the people again write that field tests were performed on both substances and both came back presumptively positive. So under those circumstances, I find Mr. Tarver's argument that he was blindsided or surprised by this information to be not persuasive.
But didn't the prosecutor argue in closing, though, that the field test showed there was cocaine?
There are two mentions in the closing argument, and both of which are very brief. On pages 43 and 57 of the October 20th transcript, in the first instance, the prosecutor says, okay, we have a field test, and then we also have Mr. Tarver saying the drugs are his. It comprises, I believe, a line or maybe two of testimony. The second mention is in the rebuttal closing argument, where the prosecutor essentially frames his argument thus. In an investigation, there's always one more thing that can be done. There's always one more step that we can take. Here, we have a field test, but we also have a laboratory test. And that, too, I believe, is maybe about two lines of testimony. And I apologize, I don't have the specific lines, but I believe it's pages 43 and 57, respectively. Other than that, this was simply not an issue that the prosecution relied on to the exclusion of the rest of the evidence. And indeed, that evidence is from the laboratory, which, regardless of the credibility problems the record discloses, we have officers testifying that lab tests are going to be more reliable than field tests. The lab tests did come back positive for both cocaine and marijuana. Additionally, Mr. Tarver admitted, indeed, I would characterize this as a confession, that the substances he had were in fact drugs and that they belonged to him. Now, that testimony is further supported by the fact that the officer asked Mr. Tarver whether he was working. Mr. Tarver replied no, he didn't have a job, but that he sold drugs to make money and that he used drugs himself. Under those circumstances, a jury would be able to come to the reasonable conclusion that this evidence supported that he's guilty of the crimes with which he was charged. Under those circumstances, even if there was an error in admitting the field test testimony, which the people deny, any error would be harmless in light of the remaining evidence. Unless this court has any further questions, we would respectfully request that you affirm Mr. Tarver's convictions.
Your Honors, just a couple of quick points in rebuttal to the people's argument. People argue that the field test did not amount to the introduction of scientific evidence. A chemical test by definition, and that is what this was a chemical test, which was going to apply some reagents and get a reaction if a certain substance was present. That in itself is a scientific process, we would submit. The other point I wanted to make was regarding our position that trial counsel for the defendant did not see this coming prior to trial. The fact that a field test was conducted indeed may have been mentioned in the probable cause affidavit in this case. It may have been mentioned, but that did not mean that the people gave notice that they were going to attempt to introduce this.
Is it the people's obligation?
Yes, we believe so, Your Honor. Shrek.
Does the defendant have any obligation to bring back issues to the court's attention?
That's an interesting question, Your Honor. I spoke with some of the people I work with just yesterday about that. And the defendant can raise it by way of motion in limine, but I don't think it's the defendant's obligation, because I think under Schreck, it's the party, the proponent of the evidence, has the burden. And in this case, it's a criminal case.
But if you're going into trial and you've got an expert witness who's going to testify, you're saying the prosecution has to affirmatively move before trial to have the court's imprimatur, if you will, that this witness is qualified to opine and that the evidence is scientifically reliable.
I'm not sure if it's necessary to file a motion, Your Honor, but I think a Rule 16 disclosure of expert would be appropriate. And that would at least put the defense on notice that are we going to challenge this or not? Are there any other questions? We would just ask that the court reverse Mr. Tarver's convictions on the two drug offenses. Thank you.
Both for your arguments this afternoon. This case will also stand submitted, rather.